Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making us part of your Friday. Thanks so much. Alongside the very talented Joy Taylor, I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd. It is March, which of course is the greatest college basketball and arguably sports month of the year. And man, did the end of February go out with a boom. We actually have baseball to talk about with a record-breaking contract for Bryce Harper. We got football to talk about with Kyler Murray being a little bit taller than people thought that he was, and Jason Witten leaving the broadcast booth. We'll get back to that. We got basketball to talk about with outstanding college hoops. Huge upset on Fox Sports 1 last night. And, of course, the NBA tonight, LeBron, the older model, against Giannis, the newer model. We're starting to get into, hey, Lakers are must-win territory. They've competed well against the top of the league. Now you're getting the team with the best record in the league at home tonight. We got a lot of things to get to. Good morning to you, Joy. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great.
What was your reaction when you heard that Jason Witten was leaving the Monday Night Football booth after just 1 year?
I was very surprised and curious. Surprised because that's a huge job to leave and an even bigger job to take leaving the NFL. So you would think that that's something you're very, very committed to. And curious because I don't know what to expect from him after a year off from football, which I think everyone is just assuming he's going to pick up where he left off. And mentally and as far as his, teaching abilities and locker room guy and all that, I'm sure it will be seamless. But the football field stuff is what I'm not sure about.
Yeah, you don't get faster. Everybody else does. A year away after having 63 catches but not looking great doing it. It's going to be fascinating. Listen, I agree with you. I was surprised. And look, none of us are blind, deaf, or dumb. Oftentimes, people who have sat in an analyst chair are a little bit more reasonable in terms of their analysis of it. It's a hard gig. It's a hard gig to do, especially when you're judged by the entire world. You're the only game. You're a standalone game. Whereas if you're on a Sunday at a 1 o'clock or a 4 o'clock game, you know, even if there's some other big guys on, there's parts of the country that don't hear you. Everyone hears. And it's Monday Night Football, which has been synonymous with the very top in the field. Whether or not they don't get the Super Bowl, they only get one playoff game. But the fact is, being a standalone game, everyone parses every word you have. And when you're compared against your former quarterback, Tony Romo, it's really hard because everybody loves Romo. And look, there's flaws in the hiring for ESPN. They had a completely green crew. Like, as much as everyone loves Booger McFarland, he never called NFL games. As much as everybody loves Joe Tessitore, he never called an NFL game. So there's no NFL chops, no equity with the audience. It was hard, and he rightfully got some criticism. But it makes no sense to leave one of those four chairs, right? It's why I sat here in this very chair before Cowherd ever got a chance to comment on it, when Tony Romo left playing in the NFL to be the lead broadcaster, lead color man, analyst for CBS. They said he's not going back. Because once you have that chair, you're at the top of the mountain. You didn't have to climb. You didn't have to fight. You didn't have to wait for a guy to retire. You leapfrogged a bunch of steps. You didn't have to do ESPN News overnight, right? You didn't have to call NFL Europe. You didn't have to slog it out. You got one of those big chairs, never give it up. So on many levels, it makes no sense. They were going to try and figure out a way to make it work. He would have been better as time went on. They likely would have moved Booger McFarland into the booth, and that would have been a good three-man booth, and we would have started on, okay, you know what, I understand the Witten thing. He would have gotten better. Our expectations would have lessened. They would have grown together as a crew. He had a four-year contract. It makes no sense to leave one of the four big chairs covering the biggest professional sport in the industry to go back to playing tight end for the Dallas Cowboys, unless, hey, why did Josh McDaniels change his mind from the Indianapolis Colts, where he might or might not have had Andrew Luck. Remember, at the time, we didn't know about Andrew Luck's shoulders. Why would he go back to the New England Patriots? Do we really believe it's because Bill Belichick was going to open up his vault of knowledge? Or was it a wink deal where he's the guy? It feels like we're all missing that. If you just look in a vacuum, do you leave Monday Night Football to go back to the Dallas Cowboys with a one-year deal, $3.5 million, where you're making more money with an easier job? That's a 30-year look. Being a broadcaster on Monday Night Football or in any of these, it's like a lifetime appointment. It's like being a federal judge. Those guys, he might not have had Monday Night Football after 4 years, but it's not like they were going to fire him. And if they mutually decided to part ways, there were other networks that would have hired him to do maybe lesser games. Why would you walk away from what feels like a layup? You know, 17 Mondays, not even 17 Mondays, right? But 17 games plus one playoff game. Why would you walk away? And then you start to think about it. Jason Garrett last week was not renewed. There was no extension on his contract. Heck, if you go back and you listen to Jerry Jones and his son, they have said, we're in win now mode. We're kind of in prove it mode. And then you start to think, wait a second, Kellen Moore is the new offensive coordinator. He's been with the Dallas Cowboys with Jason Witten. John Kitna is the quarterback coach. He's been the backup quarterback with Jason Witten. Rob Marinelli's doing a good job with that defense. All they'd have to do is change out head coach and tight end. And remember, Jerry only hires Jerry's guys. Right? He's hired outsiders in the past. Bill Parcells did a good job, but they didn't get along with it. Jimmy Johnson, of course, works here, did the best job. But Jerry wants Jerry's guys, Cowboys. I want a Cowboy to be the Cowboy head coach. That's what he's got now. And this is part of what Jerry has done previously. If you go back to the 2013 season, they were 8-8. They missed the playoffs for the third straight year under Jason Garrett. Go back and look. Their offensive coordinator was Bill Callahan. Their defensive coordinator was Monty Kiffin. Even their special teams coach, all three coordinators, had previously worked for John Gruden. When John Gruden was a head coach in Oakland, Bill Callahan, or in Tampa, Monty Kiffin. And what he put in place was, hey, look, Jason Garrett thing doesn't work out. I'll just slide John Gruden in. He's already got his guys in place. Why would you leave one of the top four positions? The chair is analyst for Monday Night Football. It's Danny Don Meredith all the way to John Madden to John Gruden. Why would you leave that to go back to the Cowboys? Take a listen to Dallas Morning News columnist Matt Mosley on my radio show, which is follows this one, 12 to 3 Pacific, 3 to 6 Eastern, on most of your Fox Sports Radio affiliates. Why would you leave? Take a listen to Matt Mosley.
This gets him out of the booth, into the Cowboys locker room where he's more comfortable, and then we can see if Jason Witten becomes the future head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Whoa. Now, look, I actually think you're more valuable to a team if, like John Gruden, you're going and watching everybody else practice, talking to every other coach. You understand the entire of the league. But being a plant for ownership, for the general manager, to be in the future head coach, already having kind of the deity status that he has in Dallas. The only thing that would make sense to leave a Supreme Court justice-like lifetime appointment of being a color analyst with no chops at all, Monday Night Football, in the second year of a four-year guaranteed deal is if he got a promise that he's the next coach of the Dallas Cowboys. It's the only thing that makes sense. Like, look, does it make sense that he didn't like criticism? Sure. That here's a guy that, you know, back when they were players, Tony Romo got all the heat and he got all the praise. And now Tony Romo gets all the praise and he gets, yeah, some of that. And I'm sure some of it isn't fun when, you know, you want to be out there playing and you don't have it fully out of your system. Like, I get all that. But the Cowboys had built up Blake Jarwin. They're probably going to draft a tight end. Like, look, he raced a pregnant woman 2 years ago and came in third. He was not running particularly well. So the idea that it's simply because he missed football and wants to get back on a football field and wants to be in that locker room, like, okay. You don't want to be a shell of your former self. You're more likely to get hurt as well as be ineffective as you know, we're all, Joy's rightfully, like anybody else, questioning what he has left in the tank. To me, the only possible, reasonable explanation for, dude, you don't give up that job. Don't ever make them fire you. If you die in that chair, great. That's a life well lived. The only thing that makes sense is if Jerry, who has done this before, he tried to put it in place for John Gruden, is if Jerry said, you're my guy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Yesterday, always interesting to see guys' true measurements. I don't know if he did the tiptoes thing. I don't know if he had thick, thick socks. But I was told from several sources, like, hey, Kyler Murray's like, yeah, just a hair under 5'10". He's like 5'9¾" or 5'9⅞", whatever. Yesterday, he measures in at 5'10⅛", which I was, so much better, right? Like, this much tall. Like, okay, now he can play quarterback in the National Football League. Now we're good. It's not the Olympics, right? There's the famous Jerry Seinfeld deal about the Olympics, right? The difference between a gold medalist and fourth place is like, greatest guy in the world? Never heard of him. You know, it's like that. It's literally that much. But I kind of think we're sort of missing a little bit of the point on Kyler Murray. Think about this for a second. Look, Kyler Murray was, and I believe I sat in this chair, or on that chair, Joy. And I said, Kyler Murray's going to win the Heisman. Kyler Murray is Doug Flutie with Mike Vick's athleticism. And what's happened is because his measurements are similar, not the same, hand size much smaller, he's slightly smaller and actually weighed a little bit more, 207 as opposed to 204 to Russell Wilson. We're like, well, look, if Russell Wilson can win a Super Bowl and play in another one, Kyler Murray should be your number one overall pick. That's the correlation we're making. There's a couple different parts to it which are interesting. I think we would agree that Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and even Baker Mayfield are outliers. Now, can we say the league has changed over the last 10, 15? Yeah, like a blind man could see the league is changing. It's evolving. On the other hand, you have some of these older quarterbacks that have stood the test of time. I mean, look at Phillip Rivers. He started, what is it, like 207 consecutive games, and he can't move at all. He was a bad athlete before he tore his ACL, before he was in his mid-30s. Now he's a terrible athlete, but he's a really good quarterback because you don't have to have the type of athleticism that Kyler has in order to have long, sustained success. You still throw from the pocket. That's where your success is. And so the idea that an undersized quarterback, which is what he is, whether he's 5'9¾" or 5'10", and whether a guy who weighs roughly 200 pounds, probably below, like I think the reason he didn't run yesterday, which I would like to see him run, which is he probably put on weight for the combine, but he knows that that weight is going to hurt his 40 time. And Baker Mayfield told me at the Super Bowl, he's a 4'2 guy. So maybe he's a 4'3 guy, but if you're running with 15 extra pounds, you're probably a 4'4, 4'5 guy. Regardless of which, whatever his size is, he would have to be an outlier in order to be successful in the NFL. And this reminds me of the you don't need college guy. Do you need college? I don't know if you absolutely positively need to graduate from college. And I understand that there's a lot of reasons some people never make it to college. Parents can't afford it. They grew up in an environment where it's not valued, or they have a troubled childhood. They're moving around houses, or they simply don't have, not everyone's educational base is like our own. Sometimes schools don't provide the right level of, you know, core curriculum in order to help kids do well in the standardized test. Or maybe it's just not, again, not valued. And so people like to point out, you know, Cowherd never graduated Eastern Washington. And he's as successful as anyone has ever been in this business. Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg. Now, case in point, they had to actually get into Harvard in order to withdraw from Harvard. Larry Ellison, who owns an island, right? Like, how many islands are there in Hawaii? He actually owns one. That's the biggest baller move of all time. You can tell me about Zuckerberg and Bill Gates trying to save the world. Larry Ellison actually owns one of the Hawaiian islands. That's a mic drop, isn't it? Didn't finish college. Now, he did go to the University of Chicago, which is one of the 10 best schools in America, but he didn't finish. But if you want to say, like, hey, I don't need college, Larry Ellison didn't need college. Well, he did get into University of Chicago, so there was some ability to be competitive. One, can you be competitive in high school? And two, do you value on some level your core education in order to get into those schools? But I don't need college guy is a little bit like, I know that through the 50 years of the NFL, there's been like five guys smaller than 6 feet tall who have been successful as quarterbacks in the NFL. But that by definition is an outlier. But here's the other problem. Here's the other problem with the Russell Wilson comparison. Okay, forget about the fact that Russell Wilson had to lose weight before the combine and Kyler had to gain weight. Or the fact that Russell Wilson has longer arms and is more a little bit more of a pocket thrower. Like, here's what we forget about Russell Wilson. Kyler Murray has a chance to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. And how we evaluate the number one pick is different than any other pick, especially a third round pick. So if I were to tell you that Kyler Murray comes into the National Football League, and this year with the Arizona Cardinals, with the air raid scheme, with Cliff Kingsbury as their head coach, he has 9 games of less than 200 yards passing. He has 0 games of 300 yards passing. Would Kyler Murray live up to the expectations and hype of being the number one overall pick? No. What if in his second season, he had just 200-300 yard passing games and 6 games below 200 yards? Would you say that he was a good quarterback to be taken number one overall? Of course not. Of course not. That's what Russell Wilson did. See, Russell Wilson, yes, he's become a very good, maybe great, but very good quarterback in the National Football League. But he walked into a deal where they had the Legion of Boom, not yet in their prime. They had a great running game, a good offensive line, and he didn't have to do anything other than hud-hud hike, hand off the ball, and occasionally scramble and complete a pass on third down. That the diminutive outlier quarterback that's become a star in Seattle that Cowherd has moving on, what, to the Giants in a year or two or something because his wife doesn't like Seattle? That's what happened? That our view of him is skewed because we're looking at him now and not understanding the context of where he was taken and how he was protected. Look, if Kyler Murray goes to the Arizona Cardinals, they have no offensive line. None. That's one of the reasons Josh Rosen was bad last year. None. And the expectations in that system is going to be to throw it all the time because that's what air raid quarterbacks do. That's what Cliff Kingsbury is going to do. So you compound the fact that he's has to be an outlier. A no college can still succeed. Walt Disney didn't go to college. It has happened. 5'10" quarterbacks have made it. But then you put, he's the number one pick potentially, playing in a system where they're going to make him throw. They're not going to allow him to develop and evolve as a pro quarterback. Feels like a recipe for disaster to me.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Here's what's interesting about the LeBron thing. Tonight they take on the Milwaukee Bucks at Staples Center. And there's going to be a little bit of the older model and newer model, right? On offense and on defense, and granted, Giannis is not, and he may never be, the shooter that LeBron is, as LeBron has become a very good shot maker after sometimes struggling with his jump shot early in his career. But it's fascinating. You know, there was a quote from LeBron a couple of days ago after they beat the Pelicans 2 nights ago about how teams, you know, are going to go at him on defense, and he used to, like, bring it on. Like, Julius Randle had 35 against you, dude. So I would offer this up. We can debate whether or not LeBron is the greatest player of all time, the second greatest player of all time. It's great for TV shows. It's great for radio shows. I host one, and I'm guest hosting in here for Colin Cowherd. But sometimes we get lost in the, is he an all-time great historically, and is he one of the best players now? And I would offer up that LeBron James, so far, based upon his play at both ends of the floor, is not playing like a top 10 player in the NBA. He's just not. Like, has he had a better and more impactful year at both ends of the floor than Giannis Antetokounmpo? No. You can give me the raw stats about how, well, you know, he's averaging slightly fewer points and, you know, and less assists and less rebounds or whatever. But if you watch the other end of the floor, you're trying to hide LeBron James, trying to hide him. Doesn't move the same. We're looking at raw stats. Has he had a better year than Paul George? More impact at both ends of the floor. Has he had more impact than James Harden? Than Kevin Durant? Than Kawhi Leonard? Than Joel Embiid? Than Nikola Jokic? Than Anthony Davis? Than Steph Curry? What if right now in the NBA, though historically, no question a top 10, likely a top five, and on some people's list, the best player of all time. Right now in the NBA, why is LeBron James considered a top 10 player in the NBA? Because in the past, he's carried teams. In the past, he has. This is not the past. This is today. This is 2019. 34 years old, coming off of a groin injury. You show me where he's a top 10 player in the NBA. You want to give me his stats? That's fine. I'll give you Russell Westbrook's stats. He had another triple-double last night. They didn't win, but if you just want to give me stats, I'll give you he's averaging a triple-double for the third straight year. And with that, we bring in Chris Broussard, who, of course, has his own radio show along with Crazy Uncle Rob Parker, where they argue for 3 hours every night, 7 to 10 Eastern Time, 4 to 7 Pacific. And, of course, you saw him on Undisputed. You see him on all of our TV shows.
Wow.
Right now.
You just dropped a bomb. The godly.
Not really. Again, like this is, I don't think it's being as disrespectful to LeBron as a like Nick Wright right now is probably tweeting furiously. But like the reality of it is like, look, dude, he's 34.
No,
his contemporaries are Dwayne Wade, who is, you know, petering out in Miami with a miracle last second shot a couple nights ago. And of course,
last night, Carmelo Anthony,
right? Like those guys aren't even in the league.
If LeBron fell off from tonight forward, he still has had a tremendous career.
He's still a top 10, top five, maybe best player of all time.
He's played way more games than Michael Jordan did. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, all those guys. I would say, LeBron hasn't had as good of a season as a lot of those guys on that list. He's not going to be first team all NBA, which is a trip. But before he got hurt, he was on pace to be first team all NBA. He had carried that team to the fourth seed from a 35 win team before to the fourth seed. And I think my feeling is I still have LeBron as the best player in the world. Here's why. I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt to not – he's played 9 games since the injury. And you're right. He hasn't looked great. He's looked atrocious at times on defense. But I think he – I need to see more of a sample size. If he does not get them into the playoffs and they continue losing to these bad teams, in part because of his play, then I'll give you he's not the best player in the world. But I just think he's earned the benefit of the doubt to say, I'm not going to take that mythical title from him after 9 games. Because before the injury, the 18 he missed and the 9 games, it was arguable. I mean, you were saying Durant, I think, at that point, and certainly people could make arguments for other guys. But I think most people still, through Christmas Day, believe LeBron was the best player in the world. And he was carrying that team to a nice season.
I think, like, look, they were 17-10 at one point in time. But if we remember back, like, okay, we're cutting out the first 10 games where it really wasn't.
Well, and it
really,
takes, you, it, you know, a while to adjust it. Right.
I mean, part of the whole Lakers thing is they were learning how to play with LeBron. And just as they started to learn how to play with him and with his style, then he goes out. Now they got to learn how to play without him. Then they come back. And, oh, yeah, by the way, while they're out, Joy pointed out, they've had a litany of injuries, not just LeBron. And then when they come back, now their schedule is more difficult. My issue is we're judging him, evaluating him against the best players. Some of these losses have been against the worst teams. It's it's not like when you're losing. We lost to the Sixers. The Sixers are really good, you know? You lose to the Warriors. The Warriors are really good. You lose to the Grizzlies, the Pelicans. The only reason they beat the Pelicans is because Anthony Davis only played 20 minutes. Otherwise, they lose that game. And no, I'm just evaluating based upon what the body of work this year against everybody else's body of work at the top. And I would tell you that their body works better.
I could argue, again, these last nine games, without question, I mean, he hasn't been the same. But I don't know, did he get out of shape when he was hurt? Did he not know how to respond to the longest absence of his career? You know, is he still working his way back? Like, I think he's earned the right for the benefit of the doubt, to a larger sample size. And I typically say you don't become the mythical best player in the world in the regular season. Let's see what you do in the postseason. Tracy McGrady, if you just look at the regular season, he's a Hall of Famer, and I think deservedly so. I know you argue that.
Correct.
But regular season, I think you would be like, oh, without question, he was a Hall of Famer. But then you look at the postseason, and even though he actually performed well individually, he never could lift the team to win. So Giannis has never won a playoff series yet. Durant has certainly done it, you know, and that's why if it's not LeBron, I would say it's Durant right now based on the postseason performances he's had, rather than Giannis. But if Giannis comes out and is great in the postseason, then I would say it's Giannis.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd, and this is not soy milk.
Ugh. What?
There's supposed to be soy in my latte, and that's not soy milk. I know the difference then, too. Sorry, what? I just see you drink it, and you're like, no, like, ah.
There's no way you could tell the difference.
Between soy milk and regular milk?
Yeah, I mean, I get almond milk in here, but if they tricked me, there's no way I could just, like, taste it and know the difference. It's foam.
Well, you're not a milk connoisseur, then.
You can't taste the difference between soy, almond, and regular?
I don't drink milk.
So you would be able to tell if it was cow milk.
What? So you're saying there's regular milk in there?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Gottlieb would like his soy milk.
Come on, Joyce.
I mean, I don't know.
Cowherd has the minions when he walks around. I do not. I do not. I think that one got lost.
You go soy milk over almond milk?
No, I like almond milk. Here's the secret to the soy milk thing. Starbucks soy milk has vanilla soy milk. So it's like sweet. It's like sweetened as well. I actually like the almond milk. It just depends on what kind of drink it's with. Like if I get a cold brew and it's already sweetened, then I'll put some almond milk in it.
You put a lot of thought into this.
I do. I mean, like you asked the question.
Stink is a regular milk guy, right?
No.
I've gone almond milk lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just the unsweetened almond milk. Yeah.
Stink, when you played, I don't know if you've ever gotten to this on this network. I know you've gotten to the other one. When you played, how much did you weigh?
I usually weighed about between 285 and 290 pretty much my whole career.
And then as soon as you got done, you lost the weight?
Yeah.
How much did you lose?
I went down to 220.
How did you drop that weight?
I quit eating. It's pretty much. See, there's this thing. When you consume less calories than you burn.
Yes.
I think it's science. I'm not 100% sure. I think that is science. You actually lose weight. It's the craziest damn thing. If you don't eat, you don't.
I understand, but like, did you give up? It's Carb Friday here, by the way. They only had me in on Carb Friday. Okay. We have this group, we have bagels. And we now have pretzel bagels. They used to be salt bagels. Now they're pretzel bagels, as well as what are those other bagels that you guys fight over? There's actually like plastic. Well, there's only two Asiago bagels, and that's like they sharpen the plastic stick, and then they have the what's the other? What's the sweet ones?
Cinnamon raisin bagels,
French toast bagels.
Ooh,
French.
We're getting your food all wrong this morning,
so
huh, Doug?
French toast bagel. So, like, did you give up carbs? What did you do?
No, I literally quit eating. I quit. I quit lifting. I quit training. I quit doing everything. And I just, you know, quit essentially eating. And I end up losing a lot of pounds. Now, here's the flip side of that. I'm heavier right now than I have ever been since the day I retired.
I wasn't trying to bring that
so,
up.
So fantastic. I did step on the scale the other day, and then I got to the point where I was like, oh my goodness, I need to get back on the don't eat anymore diet because I'm way too heavy.
Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champion, joining us. 5'10" and 1/8" 207 pounds
Right.
9.5-inch span of his hands. Mm-hmm. Is Kyler Murray big enough to play quarterback in the NFL?
Listen, the game has changed because you're playing 60-65% of the game is out of shotgun. He had less balls batted down the line of scrimmage than any quarterback in college football last year. I believe only 5 times was a ball batted down the line of scrimmage. So if you've got, I think one of the things you have to understand when you're watching film, guys that have great pocket awareness, that don't stare at the rush, but feel it, can slide, can find windows, and deliver the ball accurately on time. Whether you're 6'5 or whether you're 5'10, doesn't really matter. I find it fascinating, though, that you know people and scouts and just general people that cover the league are like, oh, he's 207. Now he's a legitimate, you know, first overall pick. Like, that is so faulty. That is so stupid. Like, one, are you going to be able to retain that weight during the season? Probably not. We used to play this game when I was playing for the Broncos, me and Tommy Nalen. So both Tommy Nalen and I would weigh somewhere between 84 and 88, usually, somewhere in there. So we get all dressed for practice, helmet and everything else. We'd step on the scale and get our weight. And Friday, well, actually, it was hat days. We only did it on hat days, so we didn't have a helmet on. So hat days were, if you won on Sunday, like, we got not to we didn't have to wear helmets on Friday. So we'd be in shorts and, you know, jerseys and hat day, right? So we'd weigh ourselves on the scale before we went out to practice. And then we would we would consume water at an ungodly rate. You'd be sloshing around out there to see who could gain the most weight during an hour and a half practice. By the end of practice, man, you've got to urinate. You're sloshing around. You're totally uncomfortable. Then we would rush right in to see how much weight we would gain. And I literally could gain 8 to 10 pounds during an hour and a half practice by just drinking water. We would sit there between the defense would be doing whatever they're doing, and we're just, you know, you had the little squirt bottle things. Yeah. We'd just be pounding water. It was the most ridiculous thing. You have to do something to keep yourself entertained. But 207 pounds, like, who cares? You know, think about this, Doug. The last time I ever ran a 40 was 1989. I went on to start for 12 years in the league. The last time I ever did a vertical jump was when a team was testing me and all these. The last time I ever did the 225 bench test was 1989. Then I went on to start for 12 years, and it didn't matter anymore. If it's such a great indicator of your football skills, why do we not do it every year?
And by the way, your dad still benches 225, reps it out. I don't know if people have seen pictures of his dad. His dad is built like a Greek god.
Right.
And we have there's pictures to prove it. Okay, so if that's not what playing quarterback's about, some of it's on film.
Yeah.
And some of it's also, there's a leadership component to it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You played with Doug Williams when your first Super Bowl, right?
Well, no, Doug Williams I played with, it was before I got there. So I played with Doug Williams for a year, but I didn't win a Super Bowl with Doug Williams. Mark Rippon, and then 2 with John Elway.
Okay, so Rippon, Doug Williams.
That's 3 Super Bowls for those counting at home. Hold on. 3.
Okay, so.
Who's counting?
Wait, I am. Doug Williams, Mark Rippon, John Elway.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong. When they walk into a room, all 3 take over a room in terms of personality, persona?
In different ways, though.
Explain.
Like, different ways. Like Rippon was happy action, fun, love, you know, just goofing around guy. But when it came time, you know, to play on Sunday, man, he was dialed in. He's ready to roll. You know, Elway was more subdued, business-like. So that was kind of his, but when he walked into the huddle, it didn't matter what the situation was. When he walked into the huddle, man, you knew you had an opportunity. You could be down 14, and you're like, okay, we got him right where we want him. Let's roll. Like, that's the kind of presence he had. Doug was very much the same way. I remember the first game I ever started was a game against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Vet. They had the #1 defense. They had, I mean, it was Jerome Brown and Mike Pitts and, you know, Reggie White and Clyde Simmons and Byron Evans. And, I mean, they were loaded,
dudes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in the bus, and I'm scared to death. I mean, I'll just flat out honest. I am scared. I don't know if I belong. I honestly don't. And I knew it wasn't going to be a lack of effort that was going to get me booted out of the league, but I didn't know. And I'm sitting on the bus, and Doug Williams walks on the bus, and he walks right by me. And all of a sudden, he stops, and you can feel his presence behind you. He stops. He backs up, taps me on the shoulder, and he said, hey, listen, the only difference between you and them is they've had an opportunity to make a name for themselves. And he goes, and today, you're going to make a name for yourself. And he goes, I have nothing but the utmost faith in your ability. I went out, got a game ball, and wreaked havoc. You know, got in a fight, the only fight I've ever been in. It was awesome. I mean, it was like, it was, because Mike Pitts, I was dispensing justice on Mike Pitts, and Mike Pitts is so frustrated because he thought he was going to be player of the game and have, you know, four sacks and go straight to the Pro Bowl, right? And I'm wearing his ass out. And Mike Pitts takes a shot at me, and I swear to you, my wife's over there, she can tell you, I took double hands. I tried to break his freaking jaw. I mean, I just wham. And then Ernest Biner came flying in, tackled him, and it was melee, and everybody's pulling us apart, you know, and flags are flying and stuff. And it was just my way of saying, I may be a 10th rounder out of Idaho, but you're not going to punk me. Like, I didn't come here to get punked.
And I bring that up because one of the I think the biggest discussion point is people want to say, well, Baker Mayfield was in the same system, and Kyler surpassed him statistically. And, like, there's a difference between Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. Like, Baker Mayfield, you know, people may not like his persona, but there's a persona, and his teammates seem to love it. But at Oklahoma, teammates love it. In Cleveland, teammates seem to love it, right? There's get behind me, you've covered him, you know it. And then I saw Kyler Murray. Take a listen. This is Kyler on with Dan Patrick at the Super Bowl.
Are you going to the combine?
I don't know.
Dad, is he going to the combine?
No comment.
Dad had no comment there. Pro day?
I mean, that's after the combine.
Yeah, are you going to do a pro day? Yeah?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, look, it was a bit of an uncomfortable Q&A because, remember, he's under contract with the A's, okay, in fairness to him, and he's just a kid. And look, he won every high school football game he ever started in the state of Texas. He is a legend in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who started as a freshman at A&M, lost his gig, and then goes up to Oklahoma and comes out of nowhere, wins the Heisman Trophy, and leads them to another Big 12 title.
Right.
So he is accomplished. He is no dummy. He's a bright kid as well.
Right.
But there is a difference in the personality, in the presence that quarterbacks have.
Sure.
And I don't know if he has it. And I almost feel like we're questioning the wrong things about
yeah, it. Yeah, I think the combine's a joke. Okay, first off, it's a test of athletic ability. It has nothing to do with your football ability. I always say this, football is easy for football players. It's really hard for athletes. And all you're figuring out here is who's the athletes. So it goes back to the film. It goes back to the intangible stuff, how much you're willing to prepare, how much you're willing to work, what you're able to to understand, and how quickly you can make decisions. So all those things are more important. I think it's medical is the most important thing you're going to do here. Two is personality. Let me talk to you.
Right.
All the 40s and all that garbage is exactly what it is. If we lined up and ran 40s and the team that ran the fastest 40s got to win look at the fastest 40s in football. Like the fastest 40s ever recorded at the combine. You know, John Ross, how's he done? What's he got, 22 catches over the last 2 years?
They want to trade him in Cincinnati.
Right. I mean, so, and there's a bunch of other ones that fall into that. Like, so you got to take that stuff with a grain of salt. But I'm 100% with you. I don't know what he is, but there's not one cookie cutter guy that can lead a team. Baker Mayfield, you walk into Cleveland, man, there is no doubt who's in charge. You watch a Friday practice, I mean, you know, it's John Dorsey's like, that dude's all balls. Like, that's who he is. Like, he is in charge, and everybody gravitates towards him and loves him because of that. So you got to have whatever it is, and it comes in all kinds of different forms and fashions. But I think the bottom line is you have to be authentic. And then the other thing that you have to be able to do is play.
Yeah, if you can't play,
right?
If you can't play, you can't fool players, right? Like, I remember the story you had, and tell me if I'm wrong. You're in Washington.
Yeah.
And you guys draft Heath Shuler in the first round.
Right.
And in the seventh round, what was the guy's name?
Gus Frerotte.
Gus Frerotte did the headbutt later on in the cement wall, whatever. And didn't you walk up to somebody
Very first day of minicamp said, boy, I tell you what, the seventh rounder is going to be 10 times the quarterback of the first rounder. You can just see it. And sure enough, you know, Gus Frerotte went on to play for 15 years, and Heath Shuler flamed out. And there's a lot of processing, how quickly you can process information and all those different things that are important. I think authenticity, the way you lead authentically, is really important. But the bottom line, you got to play. And John Elway once told me this. Your guys' job is first and second down. I leave that to you guys. Go out, have fun, play. You know, be great. My job is to convert on third down. That's what they pay me for. They don't pay me to play on first down. They don't pay me to play on second down. They pay me to play on third down. And that's what a quarterback has to be able to do, play on third down. Can you do it? We're going to find out.
Last thing, yeah. You have your own radio show in Denver. Obviously, John Elway's a friend of yours.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. He's sometimes closer than other times, depending on what I say.
I understand. Yeah. So my thoughts on the Flacco thing were, I actually think it made sense. I think it's a short-term solution.
Sure.
A guy who is solid is fine. They can still go out and try and find the next guy. But because he's not going to make a ton of money, they can fix some of the other holes within this roster.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to the Flacco move?
My reaction is he's better than Case Keenum, but very much like Case Keenum. If you don't fix all those holes you talked about, you're still going to be on the outside looking in to the playoffs. So you've got to fix a lot of things. Here's the issue right now is you're going to have Case Keenum and Joe Flacco. You're going to have a bunch of dead money from Case Keenum. So you're paying essentially Aaron Rodgers' pay to Joe Flacco to run your football team. And you look at them right now, they've got free agents. I think they have four or five free agents right now that Bradley Roby doesn't look like he's going to be back. Matt Paradis, I don't think he'll be back. Max Garcia, Jeff Hireman, there may be one other guy. If all four of those guys are gone, they won't have one draft pick on their team from the 13, 14, or 15 draft. You want to talk about the mismanagement of the draft, and they've got two players from the 16 and 17 draft that actually can kind of contribute as starters, Justin Simmons and Garrett Bowles. And Garrett Bowles is a question mark. Right. So, I mean, they have not done a great job last year's draft, notwithstanding, because it was really good. So, to me, you still have a ton of work to do to be even mentioned as a team that's going to compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and you have the Chargers that might have the best talent in the league, and the Chiefs,
right,
who might have the best young quarterback in the league. He's Mark Schlereth, the three-time Super Bowl champion, giving so many thoughts on the National Football League. Of course, you see him covering the NFL on Fox. Stink, great stuff, as always.
Thank you, buddy.